Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, we've got a good car cast coming up. We're going to talk about some of the new debuts from the Shanghai Auto Show. Certainly a lot of news in the EV world and some updates on SEMA and some of the things that are going on. Before we get started, Empire Covers. You know, nowadays cars are designed to keep you safe on the road, but are you providing the same protection for your car off the road? Empire Covers, they offer high-quality, affordable covers engineered to protect against rain, UV rays, tree sap, pollen, pretty much anything that can damage your vehicle's paint. And believe me, it's a little more fragile than you think it is. So for premium protection, try American Armor Cover. That's their new premium cover, and it's proudly made in their Kentucky factory, and you can get it for RVs, boats, motorcycles, and more. All of their covers come with a free multi-year warranty, and we've got a deal for you. We can get to free shipping plus 15% off by going to empirecovers.com/carcast. Use the promo code CARCAST at checkout. It's empirecovers.com. Promo code CARCAST for 15% off plus free shipping. Empire Covers, protect what you love. Hello, hello. Welcome to CARCAST. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, with Goldberg. I forgot my name first. I was like, did I say DeAndrea right? I pronounced my name wrong. And what's up, Bill? How are you, buddy?
Our intro sounded like my alarm clock this morning, dropping the red eye off at 7:30, man. I needed more coffee. That's all I can say.
That's right. So you're loading up the red eye, and just to remind everybody, this is the silver car, the silver gray car.
First triple nickel red eye out there.
That's right.
That I got when I was doing the Santa Claus thing up in LA.
And this is going down to get one of your power packages.
Right? Why not? I mean, the neighbor was enthralled with what Gearhead had done to my TRX. So it took him 2 weeks to make the decision. He decides to get a trailer to go down there. I see that there's an open trailer, and
yeah,
he's my neighbor. He's a good guy. He doesn't mind if his TRX blocks the wind for the red eye, you know?
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's going anyway, right? So I nudged him to move it up a couple feet, and I put the red eye there.
Oh, and that's got to be an open trailer, right? We figured out that the TRXs don't fit on the enclosed trailers.
Hence, the only reason why I would ever send the red eye on an open trailer is because it is completely shielded by the TRX.
Yeah, the TRX is in the way. Did you see that terrible video of somebody trying to load up a TRX in the back of a truck, and the ramps broke, and the truck fell off, and like I don't know what was going on. Maybe it was just a ramp that they would normally use for some of their cars, you know, some lightweight sports cars.
But the way they set that thing up,
it looked bad. It looked bad, but they were loading up a TRX into the back of a car hauler. And I don't even know if the thing was going to fit in there to begin with, but the ramps broke. Like while it was like halfway up, the TRX fell down to the ground. Normally, we think, hey, it's fine. It can take a little bit of a drop, but I think because it was like halfway in. There was a little bit of damage, some cosmetic damage, and some things. A little bit of a mess, but you kind of see those things about to give out. Those ramps about to just give way.
Oh, there was a lot of Mopar guys crying over that.
Yeah,
the ramp.
Anyway, so what's going on? This is what's going on is Shanghai Auto Show or Motor Show or whatever they actually call it, not exactly sure, is happening. It's been going on. Lots of interesting. The Shanghai show is interesting because it's always been in the past, like a lot, certainly from the Chinese manufacturers and the German manufacturers, European manufacturers get the debut stuff there. I always found that they still really like the idea of concept cars at that show. At our auto shows out here, We did a lot with concept cars, but we kind of got away from that and started getting closer to production ready cars. And Shanghai still has some concept cars, but I think everything is going a little bit more toward production ready just because it's incredibly expensive to do a multi-million-dollar concept car and not have it be pretty close to production. So some interesting debuts, not necessarily all things we're going to get here in the United States, but certainly some shared things, right? Like the Chinese car companies unlikely to be coming here. But what's interesting is the European car companies are debuting some things there that we will get or share some technology with, share some platforms with. But now we're starting to see companies, some of the U.S. companies saying, hey, China is a big market for us. We need to expand what we have there. Of course, their design style and things like that need to fit that demographic, that culture. But some interesting things. One that came up is Audi debuted the A6 e-tron. So it's an electric. I believe it's going to just be electric. I think it's going to be all electric as opposed to, let's say, hybrid. But it's a cool looking sedan. It will replace the current A6. Eventually, but here in the U.S., I think the plan is Audi will sell the gas engine A6 side by side with the A6 e-tron until the gas engine platform runs its course in a few years, and then it'll be exclusively electric. But right now, that audience, and I don't know if it's A6 Audi stuff specifically or just us as Americans, we still kind of really like the gas engine cars. So they might go side by side for a little while. But the e-tron is the A6 e-tron was unveiled as a 2021 model. So this is on its way, I think, this year. And what's interesting is it's on this new platform. It's on what they call PPE, this Premium Platform Electric. It's the architecture that Audi is co-developed with Porsche, their sister company, all part of the VW group. But one of the things that I thought was interesting was they're able to basically take this architecture and it being modular enough that it can be a sedan, it could be an SUV, it can go higher, it can go lower, it can go where they need it to go. So this Audi A6 platform is also going to be the electric Porsche Macan at some point. Now, Porsche is still saying we will have the gas engine car vehicle available with the electric vehicle until it runs its course, you know, because I still think, especially in the Porsche world, I think people are still into the gas engine vehicles. But it looks good. It looks interesting. I think
it's a good looking car.
And it's the measurements are it's about, so the A6 e-tron compared to the current A6, it's about an inch longer. It's a little bit wider. It's like 3 inches wider. It sits an inch lower than the current, you know, A6 in the showroom. So it's a sleeker, kind of a wider, sleeker stance. I assume with the battery technology, that's very low and kind of in the middle, and the wider, lower stance accommodates that.
Has everything to do with it.
And, but it's interesting because it has kind of that fastback roof line, almost hatchback roof line to it. I'm not even sure if it really is a hatchback, but I think it could be. Interesting things on what they want to do with, with lighting. Lighting has been a big design element of Audi of the past few years. And they talked about one of the things that could be interesting is the LED lights that are in the front of the car. Let's say you're traveling someplace, or you park in, I don't know, a mall or something like that, or even at home, and you want to get, let's say, a fast charge into your vehicle. If you have the equipment at home and you want to do a fast charge in your vehicle, the LED headlights are also projectors, so you could watch a movie on the wall of your garage while you're sitting in your car while it's charging to kill some time, right? Obviously, you can't just pull up anywhere. You're not going to be like at a charging station in the middle of the desert between here and Vegas and just project it onto the side of a mountain. I think you need something a little closer to that. Maybe a nice flat painted white wall of an In-N-Out Burger next to a charging station.
Yes, it brings a new meaning to the term driving.
Yeah, it feels like, and you can play video games on it. Like, it's a screen. It's a projector screen. I don't know. Like, it seems fun and it seems interesting. I don't know how practical it is. I don't know where you're just going to like, hey, I need a charging station with a really nice wall in front of me, so I could project this thing onto there. But anyway, point is that was kind of the theme of Shanghai, is the electric vehicles that are being debuted. This particular vehicle, this A6 e-tron, it should in its normal form, it's probably around the 7 second 0 to 60 range. It has an all-wheel drive dual motor version that can go up to 469 pound-feet of torque. That'll probably be the 4 second 0 to 60 range version of it. Mm-hmm. As we've seen before, the e-tron GT, which is sort of Audi's version of the Taycan, that actually is a really gorgeous car. I can't wait to see that in person.
No doubt.
I kind of like it better than the Porsche. I think the lines are a little better than the Porsche Taycan.
100%, I'd say.
So this is going to be a kind of interesting, and again, this PPE based platform could power the next generation of like Q6 and like SUVs and Porsche SUVs and Porsche sedans and who knows what, but I'm sure they've got a lot planned for this platform. I believe Toyota is doing something similar to that as well. So Toyota has a new platform called the BZ is the platform, and the vehicle they launched was the BZX4. And I'll explain that in just a second, but just a quick reminder from our friends at Dodge. Dodge was ranked number one for initial quality and best driver appeal for mass market brands by JD Power. It's the first U.S. brand ever to be ranked number one in quality and appeal in the same year. So see your local Dodge dealer or visit Dodge.com to schedule a test drive.
What was the name of that vehicle again?
BZ4X. Did I say X4? I meant 4X.
Isn't that like Elon Musk's new child's name or something?
Yeah, Elon Musk's baby is I forgot what even they're calling it for short. It's like X or zero or
X4
or something.
Dash.
So this is a platform that Toyota has been developing for their first electric, like all electric car, not necessarily hybrid, right? Obviously, Toyota has been doing that with Priuses and stuff. They're going to share the platform with Subaru. We've seen this stuff before, cost savings and things like that. But I believe they said they were going to have, 15 vehicles by 2025. Using this BZ platform, which is interesting. BZ, by the way, for them, it stands for Beyond Zero, which I don't know. Wouldn't that be one or two or three?
I would think so, yeah. I'd want to go the zero, other way if I were
there. Like Beyond Zero meaning the opposite direction, like
should
negative one,
than,
negative two? It's just interesting where they – I love to see the guys that sit down and go, this is beyond zero. Like, zero is where we need to be emissions-wise, but this is beyond zero. Like,
have we found out the answer to where these batteries go yet?
No, I don't think we found the answer to that.
Thank you. I just want to slide that in there real quick.
Yeah, right? And I do want to dig into that with with somebody. Maybe we'll get into that more with Alistair next time Alistair's in. We'll put him on the spot. So anyway, they debuted this this crossover. I don't know what they're calling. Everything is sort of this weird in the middle between crossover and SUV and sedan. But the Toyota BZ4X is it looks a little like a RAV4. But just a little more futuristic, and obviously the grille is kind of gone in the front. It doesn't really need it. It's all electric. But a lot of the design elements, especially in the back and the taillights, have some RAV4 to it. The interior is very futuristic. If you guys get a chance to see some photos of this thing, it'd be like a RAV4 with like a little bit lower roof line. The hatchback looks much more raked. It looks almost coupe style and a little less SUV-ish.
How much of a departure is that from what they're doing stylistically currently? Because to me, it kind of looks just more aggressive.
Yeah, that's right? What it is. It's kind of turned up a notch because they're trying to separate it from like a RAV4. But if you really look at this vehicle, obviously the giveaway for concept vehicles to production vehicles are things like door handles and side mirrors, because usually those things just look bulky and kind of out of place. And this looks like it has production ready stuff. So I would say this thing is as close to being production ready as you possibly can. Interesting, because the Audi, the A6 e-tron, although a concept vehicle, Audi said, oh, yeah, that's 95% done. We got to change the side mirrors and the door handles. And they're like, that's pretty much it. I don't know much about the power plant, like what's going to be the electric motor. I'm sure there's going to be a two-wheel drive and possibly all-wheel drive version of this. No word on performance or range, but I'm sure as this gets closer, you'll be able to figure out, we'll be able to say more about this when it comes out. But I don't know, kind of interesting. Interesting design, interesting idea on that. And I guess the point here is it's not just a vehicle that's coming out. It's a platform that's coming out. So you're looking at the investment these car companies are going to be making. Toyota's saying, hey, this Beyond Zero platform is going to underpin 15 electric vehicles between now and 2025. And Audi, Porsche, that's developing their PPE platform is saying that's going to underpin the EV versions of several of our vehicles over the next several years as well. So more and more indication of everyone's going all in on EV. And obviously, we still have questions as to if that's the most viable solution. But certainly, the governments think it is, for lack of better option, I guess. So everyone's pushing toward that. The other EV that was debuted is the Ford Evos, and this is sort of another interesting vehicle, right? This looks like a four-door sedan, looks kind of like a four-door hatchback. It's good looking, it's sharp looking, but it's raised up a little higher. So now it's like, is it a crossover? This is supposed to be designed by Ford's team in China. There's a manufacturing partner that they work with on that. And the design influence comes from the China-based team. The cultural influence is sort of the current design trend for vehicles in that country. So I don't necessarily see it as a vehicle that's going to come to the U.S., but it is interesting because people are saying, hey, this could be the new Ford Fusion, because we had that car here and we're not really doing Ford cars so much anymore, other than, the Mustang, whatever, supercars. But kind of an interesting thought going, well, Ford's going to want something other than just the Mach-E as an EV platform, because that's sort of a performance-based platform.
Out of reach for a lot of people.
Yeah. So the entire dash is basically a screen when you get into this thing. It's, I don't know, it seems like it's 8 feet long. it's as wide as the entire vehicle. It's a 27-inch touchscreen that it spans the entire dash. But you can break it into different areas. So like the passenger can use stuff and the driver and the center section and
I had a big horizontal iPad.
Yeah. And so the company that is working with them on the AI for this is I think it's called Baidu, and that's basically China's version of Google, if I'm getting that right. It's basically their homegrown version of a Google type of company. It'd be sort of the Chinese competitor or equivalent of Google. Now, we don't necessarily know if this is meant to be a purely EV vehicle. This could be a hybrid vehicle of some sort, or it could be an EV. We don't know for sure. I mean, certainly don't expect any big engine under the hood. It would be something kind of small, maybe some small EcoBoost type engine. Maybe, you know, they debuted years ago, like their one-cylinder turbo engine. I believe it was one liter engine, tiny, like you fit it in your backpack and bring it with you.
Your back pocket.
Yeah, right. That would be more interesting than the leaf blowers we have now, because they're all dirty and they just blow crap into the air and they just make a mess. So I don't know. So it could be interesting if Ford takes this platform, maybe changes the design a little bit, although I like the design a lot. It's just a little bit of a departure of the current U.S.-based Ford-themed vehicle. So maybe you change the front end a little bit, bring it here, and bring it as a new Ford Fusion or an EV or hybrid-based Ford Fusion. But it's actually pretty cool looking, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's something I can – there has to be something like that for that segment of the population. 100% sure. Is it cool looking? Absolutely. Is it futuristic? Yeah, no question. Is it what's the price point on that thing?
I don't know. I don't know what it's going to be, but just based on the size of the vehicle and
25,
and it's a Ford branded thing, I don't even know if you can get a car for 25 grand these
20?
days.
I mean, I mean
you could be high 20s, low 30s, 33, you know, somewhere.
Really?
I mean, the EV stuff is tough, right? Because we're already struggling to get like a $35,000 EV car, right? Like,
Tesla's okay, but what's like, hey, what's the base on the Bronco, the new Bronco? 35?
I believe
before
so.
You touch it?
And the Bronco Sport is like in the 20 something range, 28. You know, so I guess it, you know, and it, I guess it goes up from there.
It's got to come in lower than those. It has to. I mean, I would think so. I don't know. What do I know?
I don't know, but maybe they could offset the cost by mass producing in China. Doesn't mean – so if we had the vehicle here in the U.S., it is very, very unlikely it would be made in China and brought here. It would be made here with a shared platform, the architecture. But you'll see a lot of these companies – just because of a lot of things, politics, the way patents work and trademarks work and things like that, we've seen a lot of hesitation with U.S. companies selling assets to a China-based company, right? Because, like, for example, I think it was Saab, which Saab was making vehicles, had some trouble, wanted to sell the company. Spyker was involved at some point, but the last, you know, Saab shared a lot of technology with GM, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And GM blocked the sale of the assets of Saab to China because it included a lot of their patented technology in the U.S. And when you sell it to China, they can kind of do whatever they want with it there. And, you know, you could call it good, you can call it bad, but certainly from GM standpoint, they're saying that's our intellectual property. We create value in our company by owning that intellectual property.
So, 100%.
So we want to retain that. So we feel like the value for our U.S. brands is bigger than selling off Saab and making a little bit of money, the long-term value. So they said no to that deal. So companies like Ford and arguably some of the European companies and whatever are saying, hey, we're going to design some vehicles specifically in China, build them there, and maybe we'll take some of the shared platform and bring it to other parts of the world, maybe bring it to the U.S., but we're not going to bring that car there, and then we're not going to bring a lot of cars here over there. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's the company.
The corporate weird
wise, yeah. The corporate wise, the company wants to have a presence there and work with the Chinese government and work with manufacturing partners there and get vehicles made. So but obviously it's a huge market, and some of these companies are saying, hey, the future for us financially is having some dominance in China. Just count the people, just the headcount alone equates to a massive of sales, massive numbers. But all right. Anyway, that being said, let me get into our friends at Geico. You guys own your home. You rent your home. Either way, we know it can be a lot of work, but we know what's easy, and that's bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And we know that's a good thing because you already have so much to do around your home already. So just go to geico.com and get a quote and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. So years ago, 5-6 years ago, I guess around 2015, Hyundai came out with their concept vehicle, back when we were doing more actual concept vehicles, of the Santa Cruz pickup truck, the small mm-hmm. pickup truck. We're bringing back the mini trucks.
1980 or 1990 again.
Yeah, right. We're bringing back the mini trucks. And they debuted sort of this very sleek looking, futuristic, like not two door, but it had like little half doors or something going on in the back. But it had a very much sort of a two door sporty, sleek look to it. And here we jump to 2021 and Hyundai saying, we're back on it. We've got the Hyundai, Santa Cruz. It's out. It's production ready. It's going to be available, I believe, this summer as a 2022 model. It is interesting looking. They're doing this crazy thing. I think they did it on the Hyundai Tucson as well, where the grill and parts of the grill are the headlights. It's just sort of an interesting design theme. But I like to see it in person to understand the size of the vehicle. It's interesting. I kind of like the idea. It is smaller than the Toyota Tacoma and the Nissan Frontier. I was just in the Tacoma, and that's still a pretty good size. So, before we mentioned Ford is coming out with the Maverick, and the Maverick is smaller than a Ford Ranger.
Yeah, right? And looking at this, if it was a big vehicle, if they would make these vehicles bigger, they'd be awesome. But the size that they're going for, I'm not a,
I guess they're trying to, I don't know. I mean, I guess we're trying to find a market for these vehicles. Like, I'm not throwing in the towel on it. I'm looking at it. It's not really quite my style. But from a functional standpoint, is this going to resonate well with the audience? It seems like in the U.S., we like our big trucks, but they're saying, hey, can we carve out a niche for the denser cities, L.A., things like that, and go, can we get a smooth driving, like independent rear, a smooth driving pickup truck that people in the city can park easily, get it into parking garages, get better gas mileage. EPA's a, you know, MPG's a huge thing. But also be able to have a little bit of fun with it on the weekend, take it a little bit off-road, take it camping or something. I don't think it's going to be a hardcore overlander by any means. And I don't
modern-day El Camino.
I mean, it kind of is. And I mean, basically what we're doing at this point is saying, let's take our most popular SUVs, right? Things like Toyota RAV4 or that type of SUV, maybe Honda Pilot type of SUV, and in Hyundai's case, the Hyundai Tucson, and say, well, why does it going to have an enclosed back? Why don't we just put an open back on it and make it a little pickup truck version? It probably ends up being a couple inches longer in the back to fit the bed on there. It's certainly interesting. This is one of the questions I would have for you guys listening to the podcast is, where are we as far as adoption of these vehicles? Are you guys on board with a Hyundai Santa Cruz? Explain to me how you're using your vehicle. Would you be interested in this? Like, I get it. Like, you can definitely haul stuff and have some fun with this thing. I don't know you're getting sheets of drywall at Home Depot with this thing, but then again, you're not in your Toyota or in your Tucson anyway, right? Your Hyundai Tucson anyway. So it will have some ability to tow. I assume it's going to have an all-wheel drive and probably a front-wheel drive version. The bed is 4.3 feet long, so not even the 5-foot-long bed. I think because it has an independent rear, it has a little storage compartment in the bed of the truck like the Honda does, the Ridgeline, which is actually kind of interesting. I believe when you could put the tailgate down, gives you a little extra room, and there'll be some sort of support or cage or whatever on it. So if you want to fit bigger stuff in there, like a lot of people seem to be doing, it's going to have some sort of tonneau cover, some roll-up tonneau cover. The payload capacity is 1,700 pounds, but it's kind of a misleading number. In the bed of the truck,
that's
660 pounds.
FYI, I have a Can-Am six-wheeler
yeah.
that's like a UTV
yeah.
that basically has the same load capacity.
So 660 pounds in the bed of the truck. That's what you can haul.
Oh, so excuse me. Multiply that times 2.5.
Okay.
And that's my Can-Am's capacity.
It'll have a naturally aspirated 4-cylinder. And I believe it'll have a 2.5-liter 4-cylinder with 190 horsepower. And then it'll have an available 2.5-liter turbo 4 with 275 horsepower and 310 pound-feet of torque. So the base 4-cylinder will tow 3,500 pounds. You know, whatever, motorcycle, a toy. The turbo 4-cylinder will tow 5,000 pounds. I don't know that I'd want to tow a car behind this tiny little SUV, this tiny little pickup truck. But certainly, whatever, your toy, trailer, a couple of motorcycles, drag them out to the desert, maybe throw a jet ski in the back. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe we can convince Stone Cold Steve Austin to get one. He could drag his to test it out. Drag some jet skis around or whatever the hell he's. I don't know.
Not real sure he'd even be. It's just not for me.
You don't think it's his style? You don't think Hyundai Santa Cruz is?
I don't think Steve would go for that.
It doesn't scream Stone Cold.
Not really. No.
I bet it drives fantastic, though. I bet it's as close to just the straight-up SUV. It's going to drive like a nice SUV, and it just has a little more storage in the back. It's an interesting thing. Anyway,
there's a purpose for it.
It's going to be fine. I would like to hear from you guys saying, where are we on this smaller vehicles, right? Like, we've got Obviously, our line of big trucks, Tacoma's popular, Ranger, Colorado, they're finding their niche. The new Nissan Frontier that we talked about, the facelifted Frontier, has got some good bits in it. All the modern technologies, CarPlay, Android Auto, looks good. But when do we get to things like Maverick, Ford Maverick, Hyundai Santa Cruz, and then what do you guys think the adoption rate is going to be of the front-wheel drive version of those trucks versus the all-wheel drive version? In our heads, we kind of think all-wheel drive is kind of the only way to go. But the reality is how many do you think will be sold? Who's buying them? Are they just small city work trucks, landscapers, pool maintenance? Do you get the front wheel drive version of a Ford Maverick and that's just a small work truck for around town? I mean, it's got to haul some amount of.
I don't see it, man. I don't see it. I don't know. We'll see. You know, at the end of the day, as a car guy, it's interesting to see different stuff out there and people trying to break the mold. And we'll see. It's cool.
Anyway, so this
talk about team.
This next little bit real quick is about the Dodge Durango Hellcat. And you kind of indicated that they'd be making more than the allocated 2,000 units. So I'm gonna hit this all at once. I'm going to hit this ad, and I'm going to give you the updates on this. We'll start with this with the words at Dodge. So Dodge has officially opened orders for the new 2021 Durango SRT Hellcat. As you guys know, this is the most powerful SUV ever. We've seen some of the specs, 710 horsepower, 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds. And Dodge has always told us that this would be exclusive for 2021 and only 2,000 units would be made. Well, customers were coming in asking to place orders. The dealers were placing orders and saying, hey, there's only going to be 2,000, but we'll place the order and see where you rank in the lineup and if you can get one. And Dodge has now come back and said, yes, it's still exclusive for 2021, but they are going to try to fulfill all of the orders that were placed. They are going to rush to basically get all of this done. Fulfill it. I don't know what the number is, 2,200, 2,500, 3,000, whatever it is. They're saying we want to fulfill every order and every – now – it's going to be tough for you to go out today and make an order from scratch. That's probably close. But there could be dealers that placed orders to get some on the lot, and you can go to them and say, hey, or if you're going to have customers that place the order that don't want it, like, but now that we are fulfilling more orders, what does that mean for people getting the vehicle? So going to be kind of interesting. Of course, anybody that gets the Hellcat, the Durango Hellcat, gets a full day of pro instruction at the Radford Racing School. And I keep hearing more and more great things about what they are doing and what they're investing into the school. I believe they just launched a kart program. So if you guys want to go there and do some of that racing. Deliveries, I believe, are starting very soon on the SRT Hellcat, the Durango Hellcat. And as you know, they've been ranked number one for initial quality and best driver appeal for mass market brands by J.D. Power. It's the first brand ever to get them both, quality and appeal, in the same year. So see your local Dodge dealer or visit Dodge.com to schedule a test drive. The plant where these are made is going to shift over to the new generation Jeep Grand Cherokee. But I don't know if it's just, that vehicle is still on its way. They haven't shifted the plant over yet. Also could be this chip shortage that we're running into, which is they're saying is going to definitely go into next year as well. It's going to be a big issue. We talked about it last week. Maybe that's put a little bit of a delay on the Jeep Grand Cherokee and allowed Dodge to make more Durango SRT Durangos, Hellcats. So they're going to say they're going to try to fulfill as many orders as possible. They'd like to fulfill every order that has been placed so far before they shift it over to Grand Cherokee manufacturing. And the other reason why we're only going to get this now is because you know, the Durango platform has been out for a while. They've given it a facelift. It's got the new exterior styling but I don't think it's going to pass like the most stringent EPA. Yeah.
Good assumption, my friend.
Rules. So, listen, we didn't get a chance to have Tim Kaniskis in from Ram, from Dodge, and the boss over there. We're hopefully going to have him scheduled at some point. But he has said, listen, we still are going to do our high performance vehicles like you know they've done so well with the SRTs. But expect them to be possibly some hybrid versions and things like that. So the performance can come from electrification as well. So this is kind of the last hurrah as far as if you want a completely nutty, over-the-top three-row SUV that runs like 1150s in the quarter mile. I'm actually excited about this. I'm driving a badass car right now. So I've got the Lexus RCF Fuji Edition. So we drove the RCF, which is cool. The Fuji Edition has the big wing, carbon fiber trunk lid, carbon fiber hood, more aggressive styling, lighter weight. I'll get more of the specs and more driving impressions and photos of that for you guys soon.
You're going from one end of the spectrum to the next.
And that's right. So as soon as I turn this thing in, I think this goes back basically today as you're listening to this. And then Monday they drop off the Hellcat, the Durango SRT Hellcat, which I don't even think I could fit it in my parking spot. So I'll bring it over to the Matt Cave.
But I can guarantee you, you can fit in it, which I can't say with 90% of the cars that you're test driving for me. So
yeah, that's true. Have you driven the Durangos?
I have not, because if I get in one, I'm going to want to buy one.
Well, I mean, there's the badass versions, the SR or the RT V8 versions and stuff as well. And I don't know if the focus of your power packages, the Goldberg Garage power packages, are for the SRT specifically, the Hellcat engines. But I don't know if you're going to start to get into the naturally aspirated Hemi engine versions. You know, hey, listen, we can't say no to any of that. We can't say no to any of that, but
absolutely not.
You know, but it stands to reason you guys would launch the Hellcat versions of your packages, see how they perform, see people's likeness to them, and then if there's a demand for the naturally aspirated packages, there could be something kind of cool there as well. Now, I'm putting words in
your
mouth.
When turbo packages could be on the horizon. So.
Well, there you go. Turbo packages. Speaking of turbos, I had a nice little text discussion with our friend John Urist at Helion. And I think I might have mentioned this a little bit last week. And then I started digging into what's new and what's new with our friends over at Whipple. And Whipple's got their Gen 5 supercharger. I think it's 3-liter. They did development on the Whipple for a number of vehicles. You can swap the blower, or if you want to put it on a vehicle without a supercharger, you know, like the Mustang Bullet, right, which has been replaced by the Mach 1. They've updated their website to say, well, we feel like this supercharger, because we developed it for the Bullet and it's basically the same engine, could apply to the Mach 1 as well. So now it looks like our friends at Helion are making a twin turbo package for the new Mustangs and the Mach 1. And I believe he's working on a Dodge Charger twin turbo package as well. I don't know if it's the Hellcat Charger, but I think it's just the... Just a Charger, because he hit me up and he's like, we're doing some stuff on the Charger, and he's wrapping up his Mach 1 performance numbers right now. So I said, when you're able to, I see you're hiding back there, but we like,
no comment.
Listen, we are obviously big fans of the guys at Gearheads, what they're doing, what you're doing with them, but John is a sweet guy. He's a smart guy. He's got a great operation, I believe, in New Mexico. We met with him several times at SEMA as well. One of the old school guys in the business. We like what Whipple is doing. We like what some of the other manufacturers are doing. I did speak a little bit to the guys at Roush and said, I heard about the new TVS R3100 rotors. These are the new rotors from Eaton. Eaton supplies the internal rotors for a lot of the twin screw superchargers, Edelbrock, Roush, a number of companies. VMP, I think, VMP, I think, is already testing their 3100 supercharger. So anybody out there with the 2650 rotors? Anybody with that supercharger with the 2650? Eaton said they got a lot of demand from customers and their vendors saying, hey, we'd like to see a little bit more power, but without having to really repackage everything. So Eaton was able to come up with their TVS, I believe it's twin vortice screw. I think that's what TVS is. There are 3100 rotors, and with very minor modifications, they fit in the case of the 2650s. And but with about 10% more airflow. So it is an easier way for a lot of the supercharger manufacturers to start phasing in a 3100 blower, phasing out a 2650, but without massive R&D and even casting new cases, which is the big issue, right? So I think they're doing something with the gear drive in the front or the bearings to make it all work and fit, but I don't believe they need to recast anything. So,
well, that's huge.
The companies, the Roushes, the VMPs, the Edelbrocks of the world, they have castings, probably hundreds of them stacked up for future blowers that they want to make. And they haven't been finished yet, and they got to do all the work on it. So if they can build it with the 3100 screws, that was a big intention. So I talked to Roush. I believe they are making a 3100 blower. But they did tell me, this is very self-serving, that they do not have any plans for a Mach 1 supercharger at this point. So,
at this point,
he said, thanks. I reached out to our friend Jack Roush Jr. and Jack told me, they've got a lot of things in store for their performance packages and superchargers and, of course, their suspension and everything else. And he said no immediate plans for the Mach 1, but you never know.
We're just like everybody else. We needle and pry, and we want answers before it. We want the products yesterday.
You know how
I'm waiting on my bumpers from ADD right now. I wanted it yesterday.
That's just
how the whole culture is. We're no different.
I reach out to friends in the space and say, hey, what are you doing on a vehicle that I don't even own yet? And I pass it off as because the cars are being delivered to other people. So this isn't just for me. It's for other people.
Right. And, your listeners want to know, period. That's
what I'm saying. You guys want to know. And one of the other things I was digging into was Roush, to their credit, has been very good on selling a supercharger kit. The supercharger has a warranty, and then they also cover the powertrain warranty of your vehicle that gets voided when you add the supercharger. So they're saying, we've got you.
That's fantastic.
Which is fantastic, yeah. So you could arguably purchase a new vehicle that has a warranty, lease a vehicle that has a new warranty, you can install their supercharger, and they say, hey, you lose the engine warranty, but we're taking over on that. And Roush has been known to
amazing to
be very good on just making that happen. You know, somebody breaks an engine and they've got an engine in the mail as part of
that alone warranty. Would give me a reason to go out and buy a Ford.
And I'm telling you, that is one of the reasons why they move so many superchargers. They make a good kit, and they back it up. Listen, they would never offer that warranty if they didn't think that their supercharger was good. Right, right. So what's happening is there's two things that everyone keeps asking is hey, is it 50 state emissions legal? And more companies are getting into that. You almost have to at this point, right? You need to have emissions legality. And then two, what is the supplemental warranty? And I'm starting to see companies like Whipple offers it third party. ProCharger offers it third party. They've made the arrangements. They've worked with another company. And for some fee, I don't know, $700, $750, $800, you can replace your factory 3-year, 36,000-mile warranty or whatever with the supplemental warranty. And there's some limits and some caps and things like that. But those are interesting, especially, you know, I know you're working on packages.
Yeah, interesting. Those are freaking crucial to your plans of modifying these vehicles. I mean,
yeah,
you know, we're inquiring right now as to a backup motor for the twin turbo charger because we know it's probably going to blow at some point. So well, it's not going to be covered.
That's a little different.
I've done.
That's a little different for you because it's an R&D vehicle, and you kind of need to push it to the point of almost destruction so you can know where the limitations are. It's an expensive test.
Hopefully I'm not in at the time.
Yeah. Mario's going to have all sorts of data logging. It's basically just going to be you grinning the ear to ear at that thing. Blows up, hopefully on your property someplace, so you could just walk home and just leave it there for a minute.
I'll be heading down to Gearhead probably next week after, and then yes, it'll be up here immediately after that. So we'll see. Hopefully it stays together everywhere.
Yeah. Anyway, the idea of emissions certifications, aftermarket warranties. It turns out all those crank calls I've been getting going, hey, your aftermarket warranty is about to expire. You might want to go. Turns
God,
out, maybe.
Are those the most annoying in the entire world.
Yeah. It was there was a Chris, I don't know if you saw this. It was like a funny meme, like a video meme. And it was like somebody on the beach and it was like a bottle floating in the ocean. And it was like, oh, it's a message from a long time ago or somebody in another part of the world. And the guy grabs the bottle, opens it, unravels the little scroll. And it says,
your
warranty's about to expire. We've been trying to reach you. You know, we finally got you.
That's the only mode of communication they've yet to use with you.
Yeah. Well, somebody online has already figured it out. Okay. Anyway, that being said, we're going to wrap things up. You had mentioned SEMA. I don't know if you guys heard, but
yeah, just let us know what's the latest.
So far, they're selling booths. They're reaching out to companies. They haven't issued the rules package yet to the vendors, but their intention is to do a fully opened SEMA. As you guys have known, I think we mentioned last week that that Las Vegas is saying they want to be fully open by June 1st, which if all goes well, then there's no reason why they couldn't do a fully opened SEMA. The venue and SEMA can say, hey, we prefer you to wear masks, but we're not going to limit the amount of people. Probably some version of that, but who knows? I mean, by time November runs around, I mean, the intention
is
pretty much everyone's vaccinated and stuff at that point anyway. So.
Yeah, but if you're a major manufacturer that uses SEMA to its nth degree every year, and you don't know 100% 6 months out, you know, I mean, is that the dice that you want to really be rolling right now?
Well,
it's just going to suck.
Yes.
If we, you know, in a month, we don't have that booklet out so that everybody can make.
Right. Like what are the rules going to be? Now, there is one slight advantage, and that is, as we mentioned, that newly expanded building, that new hall, which if they spread the booths out a little bit more and actually created a little bit wider aisles, instead of selling out that building back to back, you know, bumper to bumper, if you will, why not take all of the booths, create a little more clearance in between them, a little bit wider aisles, a little bit more social distancing. Not to mention, it was getting pretty crowded to begin with.
Well, yeah.
And then that new building. Yeah, that new building offers up another 1.4 million square feet.
But from my understanding, part of the square footage that was used prior and what the square footage that we know as SEMA is under construction. So it's a give and take kind of thing. I want to have somebody from SEMA on here as soon as possible so that they can let us all know. Everybody wants to know, you know, whether you're a, you know, whether you're a vendor or whether you're the general public that just, you know, satiated, wants to be satiated by information about SEMA. You know, everything, the car world is predicated upon what goes on around that event. You know? So
I agree. And even for the general public that doesn't have access to that show, still a ton of content comes out of that show. And I'll be honest with
YouTube.
You, this past SEMA show that was sort of the virtual version was a bit of a flop in my mind. It was very difficult to get information. There was no real... now, their MPMC event, that was fantastic. That event, the way they made that happen virtually was really good. The SEMA thing was a bit of a learning curve, and I thought wasn't great. But yes, tons of content, new parts, announcements, videos, interviews, builds, all the great content we love from SEMA. So yeah, we should talk to SEMA at some point soon and find out what's going to happen there. But it will be interesting. And certainly events like we've talked about, like a Barrett-Jackson coming up in June, is going to be a pretty good test. There was some other trade show that just happened in that new building. Not huge, but it was the first trade show they had. And I don't know, it was like 10,000 people or something. And they pulled it off somehow.
But as a major manufacturer, waiting till after Barrett-Jackson to get that final answer.
Yeah. Mid-June seems a little far out. Anyway, before we wrap it up in other SEMA news, one of the cool assets that SEMA has always offered out of their headquarters here in California was SEMA Garage. You know, they do measuring sessions for new vehicles that are coming out, so parts manufacturers can get CAD data and stuff ahead of time. They've got all kinds of wonderful resources to help companies develop new products, emissions testing, and SEMA has just announced a new, I believe, 45,000 square foot SEMA garage, second facility in Detroit. Our friend Mike Spagnola has been running SEMA Garage for a long time, I think since day one, is going to be saying more stuff about it. I think a press release came out. He's been there. I'm sure he's getting things up and running. So it'd be interesting to talk to Mike as well and just say, hey, tell us what's going on with SEMA Garage. A Detroit facility is a great idea and brings a lot of aftermarket manufacturers closer to the American manufacturers and said, hey, can we all meet at SEMA Garage in Detroit and say, let's not only do a measuring session, but can we get more of your staff there so we can ask them technical questions? Can we talk to your engineers? And it's just much easier to make that kind of stuff happen. So that's kind of exciting. See that they're still growing and investing in all of this, despite everybody jamming EVs down our throats.
Thank God. Thank God they're still doing it.
All right. So let's go ahead and let's wrap it up. And thanks, guys. We appreciate it. Follow me at Motorator on social media. You can follow Goldberg. He's Goldberg and Goldberg Garage on Twitter and Goldberg95 and Goldberg's Garage on Instagram.
Boom.
Yeah. We're good. Are we missing anything? I think we got it.
Wanda's Porsche is finally going in here soon. So
yeah. Cool. Let's get an update on that. Oh, you got to post some pictures of that. We haven't seen that car in a while. You got to get something up on your...
I'll put something up
on your... put it up on Goldberg's Garage Instagram and let's take a look at some of that maybe.
When I learned something, it's a 964, I guess, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, there you go. You're becoming a Porsche guy. How adorable.
How adorable. Just for that, no more Porsche.
No more Porsche stuff. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, keep the air and the spare and the bag and the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.